Hey everybody, this is Ed Portillo with another episode of It's Okay to Feel. This is another special one. I might be saying that repetitively, this is a special one, but I really admire this guest, and it's someone who has dedicated her life to young people, to really alert young people and parents too about the dangers of social media in regards to drugs and drug culture and fentanyl. And so unfortunately, you know, her story is very tragic. Well, losing a son through and she'll go into detail. That's kind of what gave her the platform, because it was so easy for her son to access drugs and mistakenly took a pill that was laced with fentanyl. And that was the deadly dose. And so now she's known really nationally. I think NBC News has done reports with her. She has a documentary film crew that's with her. We'll get into that. She was just recently at a Senate hearing where Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota mentioned her and her organization. So her name's Amy Neville of the Alexander Neville Foundation. And she's just a terrific guest. So we're looking forward to getting into that conversation. In the meantime, if you have any questions about NAMI Orange County, what we do is help individuals, parents, and families who are affected by mental illness by providing classes, mentoring services. We have a 24-hour support line. We have different support groups. And it's all on our website. You can find all the information at our website at namioc.org. That's namioc.org. And this is okay. This is it's okay to feel. I'm your host, Ed Portillo. I'm the program manager here at NAMI Orange County. And this is a podcast about mental health and all the things that intersect that subject. So we talk about different things that touch on the mental health of an individual and how to thrive in the midst of different things and different subjects that are hard to kind of tackle. And so we thank you for looking at this and listening to this, if you're listening. And if you have any questions or you want to get any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. It's okay to feel at namioc.org. That's it's okay to feel at namioc.org. That's no apostrophe or parenthesis, just a full it's okay to feel. Anyways, without further ado, let's get to Amy Neville. Thanks. All right, and we are here with Amy Neville. Hello, Amy.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. It's a beautiful day. All been kind of rainy these past couple of days, so it's nice to kind of have all the sunshine back.
Yeah.
I did a little brief introduction, but I would like to give you an opportunity just to kind of tell us a little about your organization yourself. Kind of what you're doing.
Sure. Like I said, my name is Amy Neville, and I am the president of the Alexander Neville Foundation. And the foundation came to be after the loss of my 14-year-old son, Alexander, to a counterfeit pill that he purchased through Snapchat. Long story short, we thought we had the safeguards in place to protect our kid. And once Alex died, we learned how wrong we were about those things. You know, we didn't know about the depth of harms on social media. We bought into the whole look out for the bullies and look out for sexual predators. We did those things. We didn't know about the drug emoji code. No one was talking about fentanyl at the time of Alexander's death. So we've made it our life's work now, our mission, to go out and educate others on those topics. And everything we do is youth informed. So we reach out to teens across the country, we learn from them, and we create our content based on what they tell us and what will resonate with them.
Yeah. And just a little note too, we did have a Hope and Recovery forum that is currently on our YouTube page at NAMI OC, or at YouTube and search for NAMI OC. You'll find our initial interview on that forum, which was just an hour. So we might be able to keep this an hour or kind of go over, just depending on how things go, as we have a podcast form. So, let's kind of expand on that a little bit. I think one of the things that, you know, we know a lot more now is about fentanyl, but could you talk a little bit about how like pervasive this is?
Sure. So fentanyl, if people don't already know, is a synthetic opioid that is 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine, and it's highly, highly addictive and super duper cheap to make. So, you know, the cartels have pretty much done away with the traditional way to make opioids through the growing the poppies and farming and harvesting and hoping you have a good crop yield and all those things. They don't have to worry about that anymore because of this synthetic opioid. And so they now make these counterfeit pills, basically as a binding powder with the fentanyl in there, and they just crank them out. There's no perfect recipe for it. Some of these pills are totally loaded and will kill somebody on the first time they try it. Some of them don't have, they barely have any fentanyl in it, but it hooks people really quickly, especially these adolescent brains. I mean, it just gets them in right away and takes over. And so, you know, they're really designed for addiction. But unfortunately, these deaths, especially of our kids, are just kind of the cost of doing business for these cartels.
Yeah, it's so hard to hear that and the statement of it's cost of doing business. Well, and I understand the actual counterfeit pill is similar looking to the actual pill.
And they look almost identical, and they are, you whatever pill you can think of, they are counterfeiting it into. It is oxycodones. It is the Adderall. It is Xanax. It is Vicodin. You name it, it's being counterfeited. These days, they're advertising their pills as the legitimate thing, and then they're also advertising fentanyl alongside of that. They are all fentanyl, and that is something that it's hard to get people to understand that. That they really are the same thing. I hear it from youth all the time. Yeah, but it's the real thing. They told me it was. They're my friend. They wouldn't lie to me. Type of conversations that we have, and so that's really tough. And then adults are easy, can fall prey to it just as easily too, because you know maybe you had a legitimate Percocet for a bad back at some point, and now your back is hurting again. You're underinsured or you don't have insurance, and so you think you can get the legitimate thing, and because it's advertised that way, and unfortunately. There's a lot of subset of people losing their life that way too.
Yeah, and I understand too that you could purchase like a thing that packages pills, or they're like a pill press.
You can buy pill presses right online, and people make these in their own homes. A lot of times the powders are now coming in to the United States rather than the finished product and being able to be finished literally in somebody's garage or in their house, right? You know, right where they eat and drink and their kids live. It's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, so this is like on your website, you talk about how this is a cottage industry. And then we're kind of describing what that is.
That's exactly what that is. It's just easy to do at home. I used to think of those cottage kitchens that people have to apply to have their in-home kitchen if they make cookies or something in their home and they sell them to the public. You know, that's that cottage kitchen, and that's exactly what's happening here with these. It's homemade.
Yeah, and all under the nose of parents, all under the nose of caretakers, who might be, you know, like you're saying, doing a lot of things that they think is correct, but it's so pervasive, it's so available. And let's dive into that aspect, because in social media right now, there's kind of this ongoing discussion, especially amongst parents, of how there is like an underground culture of drugs, of all these different things. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Yeah. I don't even know if it's underground anymore, right? Because it just pops up, and these our young people are seeing it all the time, showing up in their news feeds and their For You content, or a drug dealer messages them in this space, and it starts to look normal over time, you know, whereas you and I, you know, when we were younger, you had to go to dark, scary places if you were going to engage in that type of activity. And these kids see it, their sensibilities get broken down over a certain time. What they wouldn't do the first time they see it, they might be doing now on interaction 20, 25, because it's become normalized. And they think this person's their friend, and this person's built up their ego and taking advantage of the fact that they're vulnerable right now.
And even based on the pandemic, how people were, a lot more isolated, You know, teenagers oftentimes are very isolated because they're kind of finding themselves, and they find themselves on social media. They find themselves, you know, interacting with whoever interacts with them, and that's how they built the trust of you know, somebody nefarious. So could you talk a little bit about that? Maybe the things that parents aren't aware of as far as like emojis and how that can kind of tie into the drug culture.
So, back in 2020 when Alexander passed away, no one was talking about a drug emoji code. We were the parents that, in order to have a phone and to have social media, we could spot check it anytime we wanted to, and we did those things. Had I seen the drug emoji code, I probably wouldn't have even known it because no one was really talking about it at the time. And so since then, the DEA has come out with their drug emoji code sheets. You can just type in drug emoji code DEA and it'll pop right up for you. So you can see some of those things. Now, just because that shows up on somebody's feed or in their advertising doesn't mean your kid's engaging in that type of activity, but it means they're being exposed to it, whether they realize it or not. So it's important to really know what those pieces are. And I be able to identify them. Another thing parents should really do in these social media spaces is get on there and go through your kids' For You content. See what's being recommended to them by the algorithms that these companies have. And if there's edgy content in there, that doesn't mean your kid looked for it, but it means that's what it's pushing to them. And so now you know what your kid's getting exposed to. Another thing I think parents should do, and it pains me to say it because once you create an account on these apps, you are now making money for them, right? But if you're going to have your kids on Instagram, you're going to have your kids on Snapchat, you need to follow their account. You need to follow the people that they follow. You need to see what they're being exposed to every day. You have got to take the time to look at it because I know it's a pain. I know it's a pain, but it's important. It's very important. And I know we think, oh, I hear it all the time. My kid will never do that. Your kid will never do it until your kid does it. They might not think they'll ever do it. But stuff happens. And then, it might not be your kid, but it might be their best friend. It might be their cousin. It might be the kid that lives next door. You just don't know, but it will impact them at some point.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that, you know, stands out is this idea of the algorithm. Can you talk a little about, like, I know you've done a lot of, you know, more research, and you've actually understood a little bit of how these social media companies work. What is it about the algorithm that
So
is it intentionally targeting young people?
it's hard because we still don't quite understand it as the general public, right? That's all
Right.
like proprietary secrets that they don't like to really dive in and tell us how these things work or what's happening there. But there's a couple ways. One is especially when it comes to like the For You content or the targeted advertising, advertisers, people with legitimate products and people who have bad intentions for your kids can go in there and set the demographic that they want that content pushed to. And so that's one way that it happens. It could be based on your kid's search history. Think maybe they were like, I've got a really bad headache today. Something for a bad headache, natural remedies for a bad headache, and that might lead them into a really bad space. You just don't know what's gonna take you there. Instagram's really good at the anorexia bubble, it's called. So you're a young person, you put it out, oh, looking for diet tips, and on day one you might get legitimate diet tips, but over the course of 30 days, it's gonna push edgier and edgier and edgier content toward your kid. And then by the end of that 30 days, they'll be in what's called the anorexia bubble and getting pushed anorexia content. But the way it's been built in, it looks normal. And suddenly, what wouldn't have looked normal on day one is looking normal on day 30. The drug marketing works the same way.
So it's almost like it's training a young person.
It absolutely can be. Again, that might not ever been your kid's intention to begin with, but it takes them there. It takes them there without
Yeah.
them realizing it.
Because the idea, like you said earlier, when you sign up for one of these services, that's where they make their money. They make their money
Oh
on
yeah, the
tracking
ads,
you. Right.
selling your data. We always think of these apps as a product that we engage with. We're engaging with the product known as Snapchat, but the reality is as soon as you start interacting with it, you become the product. I mean, that's what Snapstreaks are designed for. They're designed to get you to show up every day so they can make their money off of you. And they're all the same when it comes to that.
Right. So that means that when there is somebody that's on the site and they're interacting with it, they know a lot of that, though, that information of that, if it's a young person, what they're interested
And
in. And then
even if your
that's,
kid
yeah.
has, let's say your kids, even, let's say they lied about their age when they signed up and they have them as an adult. They still can tell how old your kid is based on facial recognition software, by the who their other friends are, the type of content they're interacting with. So they know with a good certainty whether your kids told the truth or not about their age, how old they actually are.
Right. Yeah. And then, so that's so important. So important. Just hearing all these reasons of why parents need to be involved and really, really take an active role. So talk a little bit about specifically about Snapchat.
Sure.
Because I understand Alexander, that's where he
That's
got
where he was
the
able to connect with a drug dealer.
Yeah. Talk about how pervasive and how easy it is on Snapchat to get involved in this.
So, I mean, it's for kids who are seeking it out, all I have to do is just type in a couple keywords and things will start to pop up. Maybe it takes 20, what you maybe used to take minutes a couple years ago, it takes about 20, might take 24 hours now. But the reality is they don't have to know anybody necessarily to connect them to a drug dealer. You know, usually like when we were kids, you probably had to know somebody who knew somebody who could make that connection for you. Nowadays, you just can search for those things, type in the drug emoji code, and things will pop up. Friends will pop, you know, maybe there's somebody in your circle of friends that pops up. I know that our attorneys had done an experiment with three different cell phones. They got three new cell phones, set them up as a 16-year-old girl, because you know they claim that, well, the people who show up in your circle are your friends from your contacts, friends that you've interacted with on other social media. That's how you get connected to people. Okay, so they put out these three different accounts, no identifying information, no contact list, nothing. And within 24 hours, all three accounts were inundated with horrible content that no 16-year-old girl should be pushed to a girl. So, you know, it's hard to know what is exactly happening when these companies say one thing, but something else happens. So it's, we don't know, but that's why like certain legislation is so important, right? That's why we need that third party, independent third party auditing that the Kids Online Safety Act has as part of it. That which, you know, people can go in and take a hard look at what these companies are doing, maybe kind of give them a grade at the end of all of that. But as it is, Snapchat gets to self-report. Facebook gets to self-report. They all get to self-report on what's happening on their platforms. And we're just supposed to accept that right now. And that's not okay.
Yeah. Talk a little about that. What is the legislation that you're working on?
And
yeah,
there's two pieces of legislation that I am in support of right now. There's a lot of different legislation are out there right now, but the two that I'm paying the closest attention to, one is the Cooper Davis Act, and that requires social media companies to report drug content that they come across rather than just deleting it. They're supposed to save it and report it to law enforcement. That's one, and I think that's really important. The other one is the Kids Online Safety Act, and there's two key pieces in there, one being the independent third-party auditing, which we know that these companies need at this point, and the other piece that is really important is the duty of care. So what that means is that, for example, if they're all brick-and-mortar businesses have a duty of care they have to follow. So let's say there's a local hotel in your area and that hotel has a sex trafficking ring running out of it and they know about it and they continue to allow it to happen, they can be held accountable for that. We need that same kind of accountability applied to these online spaces.
Yeah, so true accountability. So, I mean, this is like this might be a silly question, but I know some of these, this legislation has been kind of stewing for a while. Is there a reason why it hasn't been even voted on or brought up? Or
the Kids Online Safety Act's been brought up a couple of times. We're hoping that it's going to be, it's supposedly being put as part of a package that's going to get pushed forward. And so we'll see where that takes us. There's a new some details, some new updates should be coming out soon about it. I'm not sure where that's at. I just know everything's going to be happening really soon here. And same thing with the Cooper Davis Act. I think it's about to get presented again, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay.
I will tell you though, in my experience in meeting with legislators in the last couple of years, it's disheartening because I leave almost every single meeting with the impression that the right wants it to be their legislation, the left wants it to be their legislation, and they're
Right.
just not coming together on it. So, but the Cooper Davis Act and the Kids Online Safety Act is the closest thing we've got with bipartisan support on both of those. So see what happens. See what
Yeah,
happens.
and that's a federal law too. So,
Yeah.
I noticed that California is going to have a law too.
Well,
Yes, tell us about that.
California has a law. It is the California Design Code. It's to keep kids safe online, modeled much after COSA. It's very similar to COSA. However, it passed. It was signed by the governor. But NetChoice, which is a firm that all these big tech companies play into or pay into to lobby and fight on their behalf, is fighting it. They came out afterwards, are suing on behalf of these companies, and they stated that the reason it's a bad idea is because it will cause irreparable harm to these companies. I think they are do not understand what irreparable harm is. I can show you irreparable harm. That's Alexander sitting in an urn in his bedroom on his shelf. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's incredibly frustrating. But and it's frustrating to see like Evan Spiegel last week at that big tech hearing coming out and saying how he supports the Kids Online Safety Act, or Snapchat, that is, and how they support the Cooper Davis Act. They support Congress. Well, you don't have to wait for Congress to vote these things into law. You can do it right now. I think Snapchat should implement these things right this minute, and then they should also pull out a NetChoice and stop paying into that lobbying firm if they really and truly believe in these things.
Yeah, I think that's a big indicator of why things are slow because of lobbying. I mean, one of the things that's great about our government is that yes, we can lobby our government, we can all do that, but more people have a bigger voice because they have more money than others, and that's where we're at in a lot of times with why things kind of are so slow but it sounds like things are moving forward. At least there was a recent hearing. I understand that you were even there.
Yeah, the hearing was great in that I can tell that the senators are working with way better information. Like their questioning is so much better. They have a better understanding of the issues. And so that's important because that will help us get to the finish line faster. Whereas these social media companies, same song and dance, multiple times Mark Zuckerberg from Meta said, well, studies show that social media does not cause mental health issues. It's like I can't some nerve saying that in front of a room filled with parents who've lost their kids or their kids have been harmed on these platforms where it has caused mental health issues. Like we're supposed to believe those things. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, so hopefully there'll be some accountability soon, and if you need to talk to your representative, please do. They're always interested in hearing feedback, and if the more feedback they get on this particular issue, the better. Because again, this is something that social media is very passive, in the sense that like it's something that's now a part of our lives. We check our phone all the time. We look at our computer. That's one of the first things that we check. If it's X or if it's, Instagram. So I can see how you could be a parent and kind of go through like, okay, that's just a normal thing. They have these normal things. Everything's kind of normal, but we don't live necessarily in normal times.
We
It
don't anymore.
tell us about that. Like, what is the situation parents need to be aware of for now?
First, I think the first thing as parents we need to be aware of is that we need to overcome stigma. And this goes with the drug crisis and the social media crisis. There is so much. I receive hate all the time, and there might be people who comment on this podcast horrible things. And it happens. For a couple of reasons. One, people were, you know, they see it, we're threatening their freedoms with freedom of speech and all of that. And I don't necessarily agree with that when it comes to our youth, you know. But also, there's like, well, you're a bad parent for letting your kid on social media in the first place. Haven't you ever heard of parent controls? You're an idiot because you should have been paying attention to your kid. Like, there's a lot of assumptions in there that just are not true. This could happen in any family. You know, I've met people whose kids don't even have social media or a phone, and somebody else is taking pictures and posting their negative things about their kid on social media. So you don't have to have it to be impacted by it. And there's no such thing as the perfect parent, you know. And then there's parents who are, oh, kids these days are always on their phone. Or I'm like, well, what about adults these days? We let this happen. We bought the bill of goods. We bought into what these companies were telling us, and now we're learning better, and we need to take back the power from these companies. And we really need to be a little bit nicer to each other as parent to parent.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a parent of two young daughters, and so just listening to this is very eye-opening and concerning. But let's talk about the young people. Let's talk about your initiatives that you're working on with young people. What, I remember when we first had our conversation, you were saying that first it was like, they were maybe hesitant to talk to you. But you, the way that you kind of level the playing field, could you talk about that, your philosophy, and then how, and then what is the agenda you're doing with the young people?
So when it comes to talking to young people, I'll host these listening sessions where they get online with me and I just ask them a bunch of questions. And in that very first one, a young man said to me, "Don't bullshit me." And I was like, "Deal, you got it. Like, I want to be as honest as I can with you." And that's the approach we take. Like, we have to be that adult that is going to listen to them without judgment. And so that's what I do. And I take that amazing information they give me and put it into our presentations. Try to really understand where they're coming from. And almost every school I go and speak at, somebody reaches out to me afterwards. I give them my personal information. I tell them, if you don't know who your trusted adult is, call me. We'll work it out. We're going to figure out who it is together. And I hear from a kid every time. And sometimes it's, you know, my best friend's using pills. I'm scared. You know, suicide ideation is always a topic. I'm worried about my parents' drug use. Like, I've heard all sorts of things from these young people. And we really try to connect them with resources and hopefully let them feel heard. Because that's all we want to be, is heard at the end of the day, right? And that goes for everybody. We want to be witnessed, and our young people need that without the judgment of, why can't you just, you know? And that's what they're up against with their parents. And as parents, we see our teens as crazy people right now, right? And they are crazy people. Their frontal lobe is under such major construction right now. Their impulse control is not in check. Like, we have to understand that. And hopefully that will prepare us to better respond to them when they are in those moments of just being a teen, or however you want to call it, whatever you want to call it.
Adolescence, yeah, for sure. It's we've all, and a lot of times parents forget, not only is it passive with social media, but it's also even passive or forget that they were teenagers, that they made mistakes, that they.
Well, and plus, we're trying to guide our kids through their teenage years without the lived experience that they're having. You know, my teenagers are probably closer to my grandmothers than my own teenage daughters right now. And that's because of social media. So we have to understand that. You know, we also get wrapped up in, why can't my kid just put their phone down? You know, they're always on their phone. They get so upset when I take it away from them. And that's because these apps and these phones have been designed to keep us hooked and be on them all day. And, you know, I always talk to young people. We do a social media and self-esteem presentation that's created with young people. I created it with young people. And one of the things we talk about is, I'm like, okay, put your phone in the other room. You know, when you get home today, go away. Can you go without it? Do you have that compulsion to go grab your phone? I'm like, that's what addiction feels like. Like, let's identify that feeling now so we can do something about it. And it's been interesting to hear feedback from that, from young people who are like, I never realized how much anxiety not having my phone near me was causing me. You know, the other day I forgot it and I was crying and begging my mom to go get it and bring it back to the school, but I couldn't understand why I felt that way. But this is why I
Wow.
felt that way. It was that it's that addiction, it's that compulsion, the anxiety that it instills in us. And so as parents, when we're grounding them from their phones and they're freaking out, we need to consider what's actually happening in their brain at that point.
Yeah, and I understand there's software too that will limit the amount of consumption that you can have. So you can actually say you can start it early. You know, if you had the phone early, and then they say, okay, but at a certain time, this is when it
It's
turns off,
off.
and then it'll turn it off.
And then you know your kiddo, right? If they're super smart, you might want to check in on those settings every now and then and see if they figured out
Right.
how to change them or figure out the password because they're smart. They know how to work around these things.
Yeah, that's great. So what are there any other things that have stood out in your conversations with young people that have like enlightened you as a
So when it comes to the drugs specifically, when I first started this work, they didn't know anything about fentanyl. It was it didn't they didn't understand that piece of it. And from there it's evolved to they know about fentanyl, but they still don't understand the deception behind it. They still think the drug dealers are a friend. That's a tough one to overcome. Like, how can I compete with that, right? I hear it all the time. They'd never do that to me. They're my friend. It's like, oh, I don't know how to overcome that one. I'm looking for the bright idea on that. And I'm asking youth all the time, how do I overcome that? And they don't have the answer either. And so they think that if that the fentanyl that's advertised as fentanyl is that's the fentanyl and everything else is the oxycodone, the Adderall, the Xanax, or whatever it might be. And so it's really trying to get them to understand that they're putting their life on the line anytime they try something.
Yeah.
And most youth get it. And the goal is to really just arm them in a way with information in a way that they can stop each other from doing this. Because at the end of the day, they're going to be the ones who keep each other out of trouble, right? They're the ones who are there at the party or on Snapchat chatting with each other when maybe the friend is taking a pill or whatever it is. And so they can look out for each other in that respect and give each other resources to tap into. And, because they also swear each other to secrecy. Here's my problem. Don't be best friend. Here's my problem. Don't tell my mom and dad. And so we try to give them the tools to, like, okay, you don't want me to tell your mom and dad, but then I need you to do me a favor and call this crisis hotline, and try to work some things out that way too. That's a lot to
Right.
bear.
Yeah, to give them the resources to empower them to do it, if they're going to be secretive. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what would you give advice to parents if they first discover their kid is might be experimenting with pills?
If anyone thinks that anybody in their life is experimenting with pills, that person needs help right now. Like there's no time to waste, right? We knew about 24 hours before Alexander died that he was in this experimental phase. He told us everything we needed to know. I called the treatment place. They needed to call me back with their recommendation, and he literally died that night. Like, help couldn't have come fast enough. But no, we didn't know about fentanyl, and we didn't know about the depths of social media harms. Like, everything happened really fast. So, you might think you're doing, okay, we're gonna call tomorrow and we're going to get help, but you don't know what roadblocks might be in your way. Had we known about fentanyl that night and Alex was telling us what was going on, I would have taken him to the emergency room, no doubt. We would have recognized that he was being poisoned for that 10 days or whatever it was. We really think it was 10 days from the first time to his last time, which is really fast. Usually someone who is dealing with a substance use disorder, it's an 8 to 10 year process, or it used to be an 8 to 10 year process before they died or turned their life around. And now we're talking 10 days, and there's people who lose their life in even less time.
Yeah.
And then there's those who have been dealing with that long-term substance use disorder and they're getting robbed of their chance of recovery. So it's just a big mess. So if you know anybody that's you know, experimenting or been in it for a while, they need help immediately. You cannot wait another day, another minute. Like, turn off this podcast and go help them. Hey.
Yeah, that's great. And then there even is you know, there's a place called Arrow House that's in Orange County that I visited that's specifically for youth rehabilitation. That's in the, I mean, for me, that was a very big phenomenon. I've never heard that before.
Oh, wow. I'm not familiar with that place.
When I went to visit, it seemed like a great place. It was in I think it's in Orange.
Okay.
And I was just blown away that just to know, you know, I was looking at the different tasks that the attendees needed to do, and one of them said call dad, and I just remember that just stuck with me as a as you know a father of two daughters, that what did it take, like, is how much you know d is there are they not connected, you know, how did that play into her not being involved? And it's just a dad thing. It's kind of a side
Sure.
note, but you know, that's the another thing that you need to be aware of. Parents need to be aware of that there are treatment centers for youth, you know, from, I think it starts from 12. It was like 12 to
Yeah.
18, 12 to 17. And that's the reality that we live in.
Yeah,
And
it really
we,
is, unfortunately. It
yeah.
really
And
is.
yeah. So yeah, I think, is there, what are the things that give you hope about
What gives
the
me hope?
situation?
Well, that's a tough one. I don't much think about the hope side of things sometimes because what gives me hope are those kids that do reach out that are looking for help and that are willing to talk about these things that are open-minded to helping their friends. I just took a four youth to Washington, D.C. last week to go to a conference to get some training to basically be peer leaders on these topics. And I'm not, you know, we're not bringing in kids who are already the leaders in their schools. We're bringing in kids who have heart for this and care about their communities. And so that gives me hope, that type of activity. And then I think the other thing that gives me hope are, unfortunately, my fellow bereaved parents. You know, we're out here every single day talking about these issues and trying to educate the community, whether they want to listen to us or not, we're going to tell them about it. And because we don't want it to happen to their kids, you know,
Yeah.
this is anybody's worst nightmare. And we want to prevent it from happening to everybody else.
So if this was an ideal situation when they're asking, you know, we want to connect to the Alexander Neville Foundation, what is it that's an ideal thing that you can ask for or work with you with?
You know, I hate to even bring this one up, but funding. We are a donation run organization. Everything we do, and my goal is to continue to provide everything for as free or as next to free as I can to communities and to schools. And so it's the donations that keep us going that help us with that piece of it. I don't take a paycheck. I do all of this for free. I can't even imagine like getting paid for this work. The thought of that makes my stomach churn. But I want to be able to continue to do that and keep it free. You know, we just came out recently with a new film called Come Back Home. It is the drug crisis from the youth, from impacted youth who they've lost either a sibling or a parent. And it's 25 minutes long. People can watch that and share that. That would be great. That would be an easy thing to do. Or
That's
have
great.
me come to
So,
your school. Have me come to your school. Have me come to your community. I'd be happy to do that.
and is there a variety of things that you talk about, or is it mainly the
Well,
couple?
so you can have me come out for drug prevention education, but you're also going to get social media harms awareness with that. Or you can book me to come out for social media harms awareness, and you're also going to get some drug prevention education in that. So it depends on what you're looking for. What tends to happen, it's interesting. I will go out to a school and they're like, we just want you to talk to our juniors and seniors because they're worried about underclassmen. And then they're like, I don't know why we're not showing it to the whole school. Will you come back? That happens a lot. But I got to let them go through that to realize that we have to talk about these scary things.
Yeah, it's everybody.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I get told sometimes, well, scare tactics don't work with kids. I'm like, the truth is scary. What we're not putting out a
Yeah.
scare tactic. We're telling youth the truth. That's what they've
Facts.
asked for, and that's what they deserve.
Yeah. Wow. And
In fact, I'm
every.
showing the film all week next week at a middle schools. And that's fantastic. I love working with middle schoolers. If you have a middle school out there, I want to come talk to you. I love them
Oh, is
because
that? Yeah.
they'll ask me questions that the high schoolers won't ask. High schoolers will like hide in their hoodies. They already know a little bit too much about these issues, or middle schoolers are an open book and they want to know. They want to know how to protect themselves, how to help their friends. I was even out of school once. The questions were going on so long with them, they held the school buses so we could finish and have a meaningful conversation and not rush everybody out at the end. It was really fantastic. Middle schoolers are the best.
Wow. And you're located in, I know, South Orange County, but you go throughout Orange County,
Oh, I go throughout
LA.
Orange County. I go throughout the entire United States. Next week, I'm in Oxnard all week. So
Wow.
I will go anywhere.
Okay. Wow, great. And at each presentation, you said you give your personal contact information just
I
so
do.
that youth
I
can connect with you. Yeah.
do. Yeah, because sometimes they just do not know who their trusted adult is, and I want to help make that connection for them. I do have a rule though, and it's like if you're in danger, you can remain anonymous unless you are in danger. If you're in danger, that changes the dynamic of what we're doing because I have to get them help. And
Yeah.
then with parents, I'll give my personal information at a parent education night because parents, and I've learned this from talking to parents, that when they're in those settings, they're afraid to ask questions sometimes
Yeah.
because they're worried about the judgment from the people around them. And it might not be that they're asking for something going on in their home, but they're worried that that's what people are going to think. And so they'll contact me afterwards and I can answer those questions later.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, we get the same thing with our classes about mental health when we do our, a lot of times it's the wives that will bring their husbands or their girlfriends will bring their boyfriends, and then they think they don't answer a lot of questions, but they're also at the end of the class, they always have, wow, I'm glad I had that experience. I'm glad I'm able to, open up my eyes. So I'm sure you get the similar thing because there's a stigma. There's a stigma around still this idea of, my everything's intact, everything's good, keeping up with the Joneses type of attitude. And the thing is that we have to come to a place of we especially parents, where we don't know we're learning and we're going to act on what we've learned.
Yeah, and that's important. It's important. And it's important that we talk about these things as a community.
Yeah.
As you know, shame dies in the light. Is that the saying? Something like that. I can't remember the exact saying, but
Yeah,
well.
exactly. Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, what's the best place to contact you for the website? Is that
It's just a you can do alexandernevillefoundation.org or anfhelp.org.
great. Yeah, and we actually got referred to you from the Fentanyl Project. I think it's also in Orange County that also connected to you. So you are well known. You are did you say that NBC News also did something recently?
I've done way too much press. I'm kind of sick of press at this point, but yeah, there's been a we've done a, I've talked to almost every major network at this point. Yeah, there's been
Yeah.
a lot. There's been a lot. And now
Yeah.
our Snapchat lawsuit is actually going to be heard. It's going into discovery, which is history making. I don't know.
It's going into discovery. That's
It's
huge.
going. Yeah, it's way huge. It's like our wildest dreams, right? So we had, been told for a couple of years, you can't see Snapchat, you can't see Snapchat, and it turns out you can.
Oh my
And so
gosh.
discovery is going to be moving forward. So probably spring of next year, the case will actually be heard by a
And
jury.
tell the audience why discovery is so important.
So discovery is incredibly important because that's where we're going to find out basically what Snapchat knew, when they knew it, and what they did to cover it up, as far as in my, how I'm looking at it. I'm sure my attorneys would put it much more eloquently than that. But it, we know from talking to Snap executives that they, in spring of 2021, they told us, oh, sorry, sorry for your loss. We had no idea this was such a problem, but you can see it showing up in the news in 2017. So we're going to be able to see how they handled that when they were first warned about it and why they didn't do anything. And I have reason to believe that they messed up the investigation on Alexander's case with the drug dealer. That drug dealer that killed Alexander killed several others here in Orange County and is a free person walking around, you know, as an adult. It wasn't like a peer-to-peer thing. And he is somewhere up the food chain of drug dealers. So, but he gets to have his life. And there's at least four people dead, at least four people dead that I know of. And
wow. I mean, so essentially they can open up the books.
Yeah, Snap's gonna have to turn over a lot of information. I mean, I don't want to. I mean, assuming it's all still there, right? I mean, I don't want to imply anything, but who knows? Who knows what's gonna happen?
Yeah, but it's still a major thing, and
it is a big deal.
Wow, did not know that. So
yeah,
I will. I think everyone that's listening to this, if you're not aware of what's going on. You know, now you're a better aware. Her foundation, Alexander Neville Foundation, is really on the cutting edge. I mean, when we had our first conversation, I was just amazed that you're going to young people, and that's really the root cause. It's not because I'm sharing my information of what happened to me, which is tragic, and you can learn a lot. But it's also about, it's always adapting.
Yeah.
Right? Because the young people are always kind of like, okay, well, I know that about this, but this is the new thing. And then, you know.
Yeah, they mean everything to me. These young people mean everything. They are invaluable to what we do.
Yeah. So it's very, very unique. So, well, we really appreciate you being here and joining with us and taking the time. I know that there's a lot going on. And so, you know, if there's any like parting words that you'd like to give to anybody before we kind of sign off?
I think that parents, we need to cut ourselves a break here, right? We're doing the best. We've done the best we can with the information that we have. But learn about these issues so you can make better informed choices for your kids and talk to them, include them in that process. And I think that your family will be better off for it.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. And thanks everyone for listening to our episode. And again, if you want more information about what Amy does at the Alexander Neville Foundation, you can find that alexanderneville.com. And also, if you have questions about NAMI Orange County, you can always go to our website at namioc.org to find out all the things that we do and we offer to the public, which is also free as well. So thanks again, Amy. And we look forward to seeing what happens with your case and how things develop in the future.
Thank you.